system you're asking? Well, maybe we're hoping for 30 minutes.
That will depend on the court.
Listed at 5, hoping for 30. Let's see where we end up.
However, there's a lot I do wish to unpack.
Let's jump in.
Okay. Okay. There seems to have been like a presumption accepted that Justice Kagan had accepted the fact that drivers for less serious offenses don't drive while suspended. She didn't. She said that record still needs to be developed, and that record should be developed by the defendant. She didn't say in her concurrence that drivers of lesser important suspensions are not likely to drive. She was just merely saying the record's open on that. So this notion that someone whose license is suspended for a lesser offense is less likely to drive while suspended should not be presumed. I mean, there's a lot of serious things for which you could be suspended for, which may not count to a moving violation, like failure to pay insurance surcharges. That's a serious offense. You shouldn't be allowed to drive with that. The reasonable inference that someone is driving the vehicle while suspended bears little relation to what the actual suspension was for. There's no proof of that. There's been no proof of that before Justice Kagan wrote her concurrence, and there's been no justification since. She was just merely saying the defendant should develop the record that people on lesser severe suspensions still continue to drive.
Zarosky, does the state have any data, and it's in their control, not the control of the defense, any data about what percentage of people who are stopped are the actual owners of the vehicle?
We do not have that data, although that would be a relevant question. We agree.
The reasonableness of the inference. I mean, if it's 99% versus 1%, there could be a huge difference in whether that inference is reasonable
or not,
right?
We agree with that basically, Your Honor, if we had information. However, the United States Supreme Court in Glover did refer to a National Highway Cooperative study that said 75% of suspended and revoked drivers still drive after being revoked and suspended. And they did not differentiate between revoked and suspended. Glover did not...
That's not the question I'm asking about. It's related to it. But my question is, how often is it that you actually have stopped the owner and not somebody that's borrowing or in the family using the car?
We do not have that information at our disposal. Perhaps I could look into whether if we could keep that going forward. I don't know if that information is easily available.
But isn't the state's argument predicated on the reasonableness of the inference that the person we're stopping is in fact the owner?
It is. However, this court and the United States Supreme Court and every state court that has addressed it said that it's based on common sense. You don't need to resort to actual experience when you're resorting to common sense. It is common sense that the owner of a car will be driving that car. We all know that from our own experience. How often in our lives have we driven cars that we've owned? We probably drive more often cars that we own than that we don't. And so it's a reasonable common sense inference. This court and the United States Supreme Court did not base that on a factual record. They based that on common sense because Glover said it is not a 50%, 51% proposition. It just has to be one reasonable inference. It doesn't have to be the most reasonable inference or the most prominent. It just has to be a reasonable inference. Now, the notion that the police, there could have been another reason, whether it was revoked for serious offenses, that was an additional reason that Glover was relying on. Glover said point blank, you can infer that the owner is the driver and you could end it there. Then they said, in addition to that, we have this additional reason. They were not saying it only applies to revoked drivers. And in any event, that would not apply to New Jersey because we don't differentiate between revoked and suspended.
What's the holding in Glover? Looking at the very first paragraph of the opinion.
The holding in Glover is that for people with revoked licenses, you could infer that the owner is driving the vehicle.
Do we have data? Can the state provide us with data with respect to the kinds of matters that individuals, the underlying reason that the license has been suspended?
Well, I do have something in front of me. I didn't provide it to the defendants or Michi or the court. I could
share it with all of us at once. Go ahead.
Okay, well, these are statistics from 2011. They're a little obsolete, which is why I was reluctant to include them to begin with. It's another point I need to make later. Okay, 25% are based on failure to appear in court to satisfy a summons. So that could be a moving violation, could be a municipal ordinance, it could be anything, it could be serious or not, but that's 25%. 16.8% is failure to pay the insurance surcharge. We would submit that's a serious offense. People shouldn't be driving with that. Drug-related offenses under the Comprehensive Drug Reform Act.
I'm sorry, what is the drug-related offenses? What's the percentage?
9.6. Driving while suspended, 9.2. That's a serious offense. Uninsured motorist.
Go a little slower. Sorry. Go ahead.
Failure to appear in court to satisfy a parking summons, 7.2%. But a judge just doesn't give an automatic license suspension when someone doesn't pay a parking fee. The judge has to find the reasons for why you failed to pay. And under the new amendments, the judge has to find the nature and circumstances of the offense. Will the suspension create an undue hardship? Are there alternative means of transportation that the person can use? It's not an automatic suspension.
Do you have child support there? Failure to pay child support?
It is. Failure to comply with the child support order, 1%.
And the source of this data?
The source of this data was a report. It was a report done for restricted use licenses for suspended drivers, which of course we all know was rejected by the legislature. And it was a final report by the New Jersey Department of Transportation.
You're not at 100%.
Was the data for just 2011 or over a number of years?
As of 2011, it doesn't really say the number of years, but
unless I missed something, we haven't gotten to 100%.
Well, okay, we could go to failure to make good on dishonored checks, 0.9%.
Perhaps we'll ask you to send this. These are going to be smaller items. We'll ask you to
follow up. I'll send this to...
But the bigger question is, can this data be provided in reflecting current information?
Okay. Well, current information we do not have, and that's very important.
Relatively current information. Well, in the last 5 years.
Well, I would say that the last 5 years could still be obsolete because it hasn't been mentioned yet that the legislature dramatically changed the law on suspending licenses. Effective in 2020, the legislature changed the law as to what can be suspended. It changes the law as to what judges have to do in order to suspend it. It changed the duration of these suspensions. Anything prior to the 2020 amendment is obsolete, I would argue.
The legislature made it harder to suspend a license.
Harder to suspend a license, and a judge has to make an individualized assessment. This notion that there's poverty suspensions as soon as someone doesn't pay a traffic offense is an urban legend. It's not true. The judge has to make an assessment as to why you didn't pay. The judge has to make an assessment as to whether this restriction will create an undue hardship. The judge has to make an assessment as to the nature and circumstances of the offense. And the judge has to consider whether there's alternative means of transportation. So there's no automatic rubber stamp to a poverty fine. If the judge had to make findings that there was a reason you didn't pay, and the judge had to make these extra findings, now that was effective for the 2020 amendment. So if you refer to the most recent statute, you'll see that these aren't rubber stamped, and they will change the statistics that I just gave you, I think, significantly.
Citation for the statute?
Excuse me?
What's the statutory citation?
Okay, it's in my brief. There's no single statutory citation. It's PL 2019, Chapter 276, approved December 20th, 2019, effective January 1st, 2021. So it applies to dozens of actual statutes. Parking is one of them. Everything in which a license can be restricted was affected by this significant amendment. And we asked that you know, and the legislature, if you're going to do something based on statistics, it's the legislature is the appropriate forum to assess those statistics and to assess the fairness in having license registrations, license suspensions. It's not the officer's job to assess the reason for the suspension when he's on the highway and he's punching in numbers. That would be too much of a burden to place on the officer to know the exact reasons and the ramifications of that reason on that person to drive safely. That's not possible under current technology. I can't speak for future technology or potential technology, but it's not feasible under current technology. We have to judge the reasonableness of the officer's conduct when he acted.
The officer's legitimate concern is traffic safety, public safety. This sort of data, if it were to demonstrate that one out of two, one out of three, two out of three, outstanding suspensions have nothing to do with it, would bear on the question of the reasonableness of the stop, would
it? Well, I disagree, Your Honor. I don't think the premise of the question that the officer's only concerned with traffic safety. He's concerned with enforcement of the law. And drivers cannot engage in self-help and defy a judge's order. A judge has taken someone's license. A judge takes someone's license and says, you can't drive. And that person cannot engage in self-help and go ahead and drive. So the seriousness of that offense is not the only thing the officer is concerned about. The officer is concerned about the respect for court orders and the enforcement of the law. The legislature can determine when our license suspension is appropriate and when the police will see the license suspension appear on the record. That's out of the police officer's control. In fact, this is the ultimate objective standard. They punch in a license, it says suspended. If we made the police go and look and shine a light at night at somebody, you know the next question is going to come in. Oh, you only decided to pull them over after you saw the race of the driver. It would actually invite profiling claims. It actually would not discourage them. I mean, this is the ultimate in objectivity, and it's not a bright line rule. It has to be, as the Glover court said, there's really three things at play. One is...
Can you provide the data for us?
I'm sorry?
Can you provide the data for us, either for 2020 or for 2021?
Which data?
Leave it to the court to conduct its own analysis as well as embrace the arguments that you've advanced.
I can't promise that. I could promise to look into it. I don't know if there's statistics could be provided.
How did you get the 1 year that you have?
It was part of the report.
That same study?
The report was in 2014, so... The statistics were even 3 years old at that point, but it was a...
You mean the same report that we were talking about before that was included in the CNN article, or you mean...
No, this is something separate. I'll send it to the court for what it's worth, but because of that significant amendments in the legislation, these statistics are obsolete. I mean, I don't know factually, I can't say, but I think it's a good guess, a good educated inference that these statistics will change favorably.
Who has these statistics? What agency or entity?
Probably the Motor Vehicle Commission. We'll look. Again, sometimes these statistics are only put together when requested, so these statistics may not be available just upon request. It might be the result of a commission. I will look into it at the court's request. I will see what type of statistics can be gleaned. But the fact remains that it's not only unsafe driving that draws the inference that the owner is driving the vehicle. And that's not what Justice Kagan suggested. Justice Kagan said it's possible statistics can show that. But she's not saying the statistics do show that. She actually joined the majority opinion in full. It was really an 8-to-1 opinion in favor of pulling someone over because the license didn't match, because the owner's license was suspended. And
this is it. I don't read the case the way that you do, and I would encourage you to show me how I'm mistaken in that. She joined an opinion that dealt with revocation of licenses, and she said, I would find this a different case, ... if Kansas had suspended rather than revoked Glover's license. So the concurring opinion that she presented flagged the issue for us, and that's the reason that we've continued to ask for some of the data that relates to what she has argued here.
Well, she also said that what are the odds that someone who lost his license wouldn't continue to drive? That's really the question she's asking, and she says that in the second paragraph of her opinion. She's discussing the possibility that these people would still continue to drive. And she says it might be a different case if the defendant can put forth the statistics to show.
That's why we're asking for the statistics, Mr. Murawski.
But the statistics,
all we're asking for. We should move on to something else.
But the statistics will not tell you if they continue to drive. The statistics will just show you what it's for. They still may continue to drive, even for a lesser offense.
Mr. Murawski, the court would like the statistics. That's not the end of the case.
Okay.
We would simply like the data that the state is in the best position to provide.
I'll certainly do that, see what I could do for the court.
Thank you.
Now, there's been some talk that the police need corroboration in order to effectuate this stop. Corroboration is the language of probable cause. You only require corroboration, really, when you want probable cause. Here, the police just need a low standard. The United States Supreme Court said we're not even talking about a 51% probability. And to require corroboration would basically be requiring probable cause. If you see that the person matches the MVC information, you have probable cause at that point. It's really no longer reasonable suspicion. And one of the things that both Donis did and Glover did, both courts were applying the Delaware versus Prowse standard, which basically says you can pull a car over with a reasonable, articulable suspicion that they're violating the law. Both of those courts were applying Delaware versus Prowse. And in this court's opinion in Donis, it was part and parcel to the holding of that case. What the court was asked to address in that case was whether they could access an MVC record. But implicit in that is, what do you do with that MVC record? And this court emphatically said that that MVC record can in and of itself justify the stop. The court was identifying the significance of that finding in its opinion. And the appellate division has read it as holding, and it is certainly closer to holding than just irrelevant dicta. And it's been that way for over 25 years. And in order to get rid of that, the defendants would have to show that it's unsound in principle, unworkable in practice, and creates reliance interests. If anything, what they're asking for would implicate reliance interests. What they're asking for is unsound in principle. They're asking for an elevation of to a probable cause standard to conduct a simple stop. And an automobile stop can be turned into something very serious and frightening. But courts have said repeatedly that an investigative detention is appropriate for the police to continue their investigation when they have reasonable suspicion. So
how about when the reasonable suspicion is gone, as Glover even noted, as we discussed earlier? If the registered owner is a man in his mid-60s, but the driver is a woman in her mid-20s, then the totality of the circumstances would not raise a suspicion that the particular individual being stopped is engaged in wrongdoing. So at the moment the officer sees that the person driving is not the owner, what then?
Well, we agree that Glover has said that when the officer's reasonable inference that the driver's the owner is sufficiently rebutted or negated, then the justification for the stop ends. We acknowledge that that's what Glover says. However, we also recognize that common courtesy is part of the reasonableness calculus. And common courtesy would require the police to inform the drivers to say, sorry, I thought you were the owner. Owner's license is suspended. You're not the owner. You know, sorry, have a nice day. Drive safely. That's it.
What is the AG's position on whether asking for the license registration and insurance card is appropriate at that point?
If the officer is satisfied that the reason for the stop can no longer be justified, then the officer can no longer pursue that particular investigation beyond informing the driver about the mistake and that they're free to go. We kind of part company with the state on that. We think that if the officer's reasonable inference is sufficiently negated or rebutted, and it should be clear that their inference is negated or rebutted, and if that's the case, the police are limited to just explaining what happened and allowing them to go. They can't request the license and insurance and registration at that point, unless, and they're lawfully in the viewing area in doing this, and that would allow them to use whatever they see in plain view, whatever they smell in plain smell, and whatever they might hear or whatever admissions might be made by the driver. So that would put the police lawfully in the viewing area. They just couldn't go beyond explaining the reasons and moving on. For the police to just abruptly walk away would be discourteous. It would be actually bizarre and would actually be worrisome to some law-abiding drivers who would be afraid to drive away under those circumstances. The police officers should explain the reason for the stop and to say that they're free to go, but they can't ask for the license and registration at that point unless something else happens. Now here, you know, we'll defer to the fact-finding. We're not here to argue the facts of this case. If the officer did happen to smell it on his way up, that would be enough to pursue the investigation. And if he only smelled it after when he was explaining the reason, well, that's also justification as well.
And the officer can ask the driver to roll down the window.
Well, as long as the officer could be heard, we don't necessarily agree that if the window's up and you're on a highway and there's traffic, that you could necessarily hear somebody with the window closed. The officer could say, and he could only roll down the window a little bit just to hear the officer. He could roll down the window a couple inches so the officer could say, okay, this is what happened. Sorry, you're free to go. So maybe in a quiet street, he could yell through the window. Who knows? But the officer has a lot more on his mind when he's conducting these stops. And so he still has the right to, you know, pursue his investigation until it's negated. And when that's done, he can courteously tell them of the mistake.
Sorry, I wasn't sure I understood your answer to Judge Sabatino's question. I understand, obviously, if the person rolls down their window because they want to hear the officer, then, of course, that's fine. But are you saying the officer can order the person to roll down the window?
Well, if they can't hear, the officer can say, can you roll down your window, please? They can ask him to roll down the window in order to say, this is what happened. Because if the window's up and they can't hear the officer, then you have the same problem.
But if the person is choosing not to hear the officer, then obviously they're not upset about the officer's discourteous failure to apologize. And so why should the officer be required?
Well, if the officer's satisfied that they know that they're free to go and that they know, then maybe they don't have to roll down the window. But if they don't roll down the window, the officer can't be satisfied that they know. So there has to be some, it has to be understood practically in the context, if it's a busy, noisy highway, or quiet, you know, urban, suburban street. It all depends, perhaps. But, you know, the officer has to be allowed to communicate that. That's common courtesy. It's reasonable police conduct. And reasonableness is the ultimate touchstone of the Fourth Amendment. And certainly courtesy is part of the reasonableness calculus.
And post-CREMA, the officer can't rely on plain smell anymore as the sole basis to take action, right? Do a search.
To do the search, maybe to continue the investigation, perhaps. But that doesn't itself justify the search. Plus, he could smell alcohol, could smell other things, he could, you know, and or see things in
Fair
plain
enough.
View. It's fact specific. So, however, the stop is presumptively reasonable because it's reasonable common sense, and that's the reason this court invoked, and the reason the United States Supreme Court invoked that. And Justice Kagan even agreed with that. Justice Kagan did not agree with the proposition that it's common sense that the owner's driving the vehicle. She just thought that if facts show the opposite, then maybe it could lead to a different result. So, okay, now, I know Justice Kagan cited to parking suspensions, but parking suspensions were modified by the amendment I referenced after her opinion. So it's harder, it's less likely someone's going to get a suspension based on a parking suspension. That was one of the things that was modified. They were almost every circumstance where you could have a license suspension has been modified. So we urge the court to take that into consideration.
You mentioned that the statute, the amendment that you referenced, went into effect on January 1st, 2021.
Yes.
So would the 2021 data include the result of all of the changes that you mentioned?
I would think it should.
Okay. Thank you.
Except that you would have old suspensions still in effect.
Yeah, the old suspensions might, I don't know the effect that the old suspensions would have.
Someone could still be driving while suspended or
That's possible, but I don't know to what. It's a very lengthy amendment. I don't know if there's provisions in there. People can have their get a reassessment of their situation. But it is a myth that in New Jersey you just get a rubber stamped suspension because you didn't pay your fine. The judge has to make specific findings to that regard. So if someone was suspended, it was a result of a justified suspension that the judge made. And in New Jersey, we don't use the terms revocation to mean something serious or suspension to mean something less serious. Those terms are interchangeably used in New Jersey. Like sometimes they even throw in the word forfeit. Those words are interchangeable. So that neat distinction that Justice Kagan referred to.
Is there a permanent revocation of license in New Jersey?
There is one which I identified in my brief. It's for leaving the scene of an accident in which a injury...
Fatality, right, or injured person.
Yeah, it's a 2C violation. And if you leave the scene of an accident that resulted in an injury, a fatality, you can lose your license for life. That's the only one I could find. Now, yeah,
that called a suspension in that statute?
It was called forfeit.
Forfeiture.
They said forfeit in that case. But in applying these things, revocation, suspension, those words are used interchangeably. And I talked to some practitioners who said there's really no significance in those exact words in New Jersey, like they might be in Kansas.
And you can you check as well for us the number of license suspensions that exist in New Jersey, and specifically that existed before the new statute went into effect?
I'll certainly try to look get that information. Sometimes the more recent the information is, the harder it is to get, but I would certainly look. So the Attorney General would ask that the amendments be heavily considered in this analysis, that the Donis opinion be considered certainly the equivalent of precedent. It should be respected. It meets the standard for reaffirming precedent. It is sound in practice. It is workable. And it obviously implicates reliant interests. So the three-pronged test for undoing precedent is squarely met by staying the course with Donis. And we also urge the court to read the Kansas versus Glover case as not necessarily relying on the revocation distinction, because they cited the statistics they relied on to justify their inference. It combines suspended and revoked drivers as well. So they didn't seem particularly interested in that distinction, which is why only two justices joined that concurrence. And every other state that has addressed this has not relied on that distinction. And there's been four states since Glover. You have Virginia, Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, and I believe Iowa have all reaffirmed Glover to suspended licenses as well.
Is there anything else you'd like to add, Mr. Nagurski? I think we have your position.
No, I think that we just asked the court to reaffirm Donis as the precedent in this state.
Thank you. Mr. Finkenauer, brief rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors. I'll be very quick just to address a few things. Just in terms of what other states have held or not held, any of those decisions really don't talk about in depth virtually the bulk of what we talked about here today. There's very little analysis about why just knowing that the car is owned by someone with a suspended license amounts to reasonable suspicion. And there's specifically no cases post-Glover that deal with the kind of Justice Kagan concurrence issue that we talked about at length here today. Unless Your Honors had any other questions on that issue, I would just also mention briefly the permissive inference issue, that there's a distinction between the normal inferences a jury can draw when they're evaluating all of the evidence in a case, which, you know, might not necessarily have to be beyond a reasonable doubt or what have you. And then there's a difference when you're talking about a permissive inference that is dealing with an essential element. I mean, here, the inference was the entire offense, basically. If you find that the vehicle had more than one occupant, you may infer that the gun was possessed by all the occupants. That's the inference is the entire offense. So to have anything that alleviates the burden beyond a reasonable doubt with respect to that inference must be incorrect and harmful. And lastly, I've just mentioned that in terms of the invocation issue, that it was harmful with respect to Mr. Williams' case. I think the fact that he fled, although that was used as evidence of consciousness of guilt with a proper limiting instruction, it doesn't negate the harm of this. Their argument was not limited to, oh, well, he ran, so he must be guilty. It was broadly, he did not want the car to be searched, so he must be guilty. And that necessarily includes all of the statements that he made during the search. And that's consistent with what the state argued at the trial level when they argued against having any kind of redactions of these statements.
Did they argue that to the jury? You said the state's argument. Was that an argument they made to the jury?
That's correct, Your Honor, in summation and in their opening.
Sorry, specifically about his statements. They specifically said to the jury, because he said he did not want the car to be searched, he's guilty?
Well, again, their argument was broadly, he does not want the car to be searched. That you could interpret it that as statements or additionally other things, but they commented on the fact that he did not want the car to be searched. That was, again, their big theory of the case, including the flight, and I think it must necessarily include the statements, especially when you have no instruction telling the jury not to include or not to consider the statements in relation to that argument.
And that specific argument that you've just referenced in the opening and the closing, both?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes to what?
It's in the opening and the closing, both. I can give specific citations from my brief, but it's in the statement of facts in my supplemental brief. Thank points you. Out the statements that I'm talking about.
There was no objection to that at trial?
No, there was an initial objection to introducing those statements at all, and then once that was overruled, there was no further objection to the state's comment or introduction of it. Unless Your Honor said any further questions.
Thank you. Mr. Haddad.
I'll be very quick. Just want to respond to a few points that the state and the Attorney General's office made. First of all, as to the jury instruction, I think while in general it is presumed that jury instructions on material points that are erroneous are prejudicial, we know that was the case here because the jury was given a more beyond reasonable doubt instruction as to the hollow bullets that were in the gun, and the jury acquitted Mr. Williams and Mr. Kelly as to the hollow bullets possession charge. But they convicted Mr. Kelly and Mr. Williams as to the gun itself, where the more probable than not charge was given.
We generally don't look behind jury verdicts on different issues and try to figure out what was in the minds of the jurors. So, Mr. Haddad, do we?
That's true, Your Honor, but the state was saying if you look at the totality of the circumstances, maybe there was enough here to convict beyond a reasonable doubt. And I think if you're looking at...
There may have been distinctions between the evidence in the two categories and so forth. So.
I think the presumption that this instruction was prejudicial gets us far enough and is enough for this court to vacate the conviction. I'm merely pointing out that this is an additional fact in our favor. I think secondly, whether the window is up or not at the car, the officer cannot ask for the driver's credentials. He cannot ask for his ID, registration, insurance. The officer did that here. That's a basis to vacate the conviction. I think that's the end of the discussion on that point. As to the body cam footage, I think the state was pointing to the part where Officer Kless said, "I was getting a whiff of weed." I just want to clarify on that point. On page 71 of the suppression hearing transcript, there's a quote, there's an excerpt from the body cam footage where Officer Kless tells his partner, "I can't tell whether I smell weed." And then a few minutes later on page 74, Officer Kless tells Kelly, my client, "I was getting a whiff of weed." I submit that what the officer told his partner is more probative than what the officer told my client when he was trying to justify his search to my client. Additionally, the Attorney General's office spent a lot of time talking about these reforms that took effect in 2021. This stop happened in 2016. So I think the question is, was there reasonable suspicion in 2016 when this stop happened? And in considering that question, I think we have to look at what the law was in 2016. Sure, I mean, this court will want to fashion a rule going forward. I understand that. But I think if you're just talking about whether there was reasonable suspicion here, the question is, in 2016, what was the likelihood that someone's license was suspended for reasons unrelated to driving? And then final point, I think the Attorney General's office said that four states have already ruled that that Glover supports, post-Glover have said that a suspended license is enough for reasonable suspicion. I don't think that's true. I think there are three post-Glover cases cited in the Attorney General's brief. Two of them involve registered owners with outstanding arrest warrants. I submit that that's distinguishable for a few reasons. First, the police have probable cause the owner committed another crime, and they're looking for the person for that reason. The owner may be trying to evade arrest. The owner is more likely to be driving because he's permitted to do so. And the police have a basis to stop the car even if the owner is a passenger in the car, not driving it. So I think those cases are not relevant here. There's only one case that is actually about a similar scenario. It's from a Massachusetts Intermediate Appellate Court. It's Commonwealth versus Pwak Kuk. And that doesn't address whether the owner's license is revoked or suspended. It just says the owner's license was invalid. So really, there are no cases post-Glover that affirmed that that police officers can stop a car only based on the suspended license. There's no case anywhere saying that that is okay, other than the case below here. So this court would not be disagreeing with any other states if it reaches the conclusion that a suspended license by itself does not provide reasonable suspicion to stop a car.
But you said before, sorry, that all states that have ever considered the question have held that getting a hit that the driver has a suspended license is enough to pull the person over. And Glover wouldn't call that into question because that is what the majority held in Glover, right?
Your Honor, it is correct. Before Glover, some states reached that conclusion. I don't think Glover explicitly calls that into question, but I think the analysis of Glover calls for a re-examination of the question for the reasons that the Chief Justice was explaining, that Glover is very focused on revocation and the significance of revocation. And Justice Kagan explained in her concurrence that if the license were suspended, then this would be a different case. I think she used that language exactly. And as I mentioned earlier, she cited New Jersey as a state. Right after that sentence where she said this would be a different case, she cited New Jersey as a state that suspends licenses for failure to pay parking tickets. And she cited the statute that says licenses will be suspended for failure to pay parking tickets.
She didn't say in the text, if I remember correctly, that failure to pay parking tickets, there were two or three states cited as states that suspend for both traffic-related reasons and other reasons. I thought that's all.
I think Glover is right here. I can look at it if you want. But I think she said Kansas suspends licenses for reasons like failure to pay parking tickets.
And other states do, too.
CEG, New Jersey, Arkansas. So, I mean, I think the best reading of that is that she's saying New Jersey, like Kansas, suspends licenses for being poor, and that's not enough. This is a different case. Sure. Trying to do that right now. Saying. Apologies.
It's on the right column.
Okay, so this is exactly what she says. I would find this a different case if Kansas had barred Glover from driving on a ground that provided no similar evidence of his penchant for ignoring driving laws. Consider, for example, if Kansas had suspended rather than revoked Glover's license. Along with many other states, Kansas suspends licenses for matters having nothing to do with road safety, such as failing to pay parking tickets, court fees, or child support. See Kansas statute, see also New Jersey statute. I mean, I think the best reading of that is she is saying in New Jersey, a suspended license is not enough, in her opinion and in Justice Ginsburg's opinion, which only two justices of the majority. But I think that is why this court should call that question should reexamine that question.
You agree with the Attorney General, though, that there is no distinction between revocation and suspension in New Jersey, and they're used interchangeably and for the same, for example, for an incident in which someone dies, your license could be just as likely suspended as it is revoked.
I agree with that, Your Honor, but I think the question are licenses suspended in New Jersey for the same reasons that they are suspended in Kansas? And I think the answer is yes, as Justice Kagan also thought in her concurrence. If there are no further questions,
thank you for your time. Thank you to all counsel. Mr. Murawski, I let my patients wear thin a little earlier, and I'm sorry for that. We welcome the data that you'll provide to us, and we look forward to it. Court's going to take a very brief recess.